A good book's job is to expose real lives. So says Laura Pritchett, one of our guests today. Laura's novels go to places that reach to the depth of human challenge and compassion. I'm Suzanne Lang, and this is KRCB's A Novel Idea. We'll expose some other real lives today with Nina Ansari, named one of the 21 leaders of the 21st century, and whose nonfiction book is The Jewels of Allah, the untold story of women in Iran. So stay with us. It's a novel idea. Laura Pritchett is an author and a conservationist whose work is rooted in the American West. Her first novel, Hell's Bottom, Colorado, won the Milkweed National Fiction Prize and the Penn USA Award. Stars Go Blue was a finalist for the Reading the West and the Colorado Book Award, and Skybridge won the Willa Fiction Award. I recently met with her at Pegasus Books in Berkeley to talk with her about her latest release from Counterpoint Press, Red Lightning, a book that broaches immigration, rural poverty, and wildfires in a suspenseful and human novel. Here's my conversation with Laura Pritchett, recorded on Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley, California. Okay. All right, Laura Pritchett, welcome to California.
Thanks so much for having me.
California and Colorado have a lot in common with the monumental geology, geography. There is weather that can just turn on you. And there's the cultural kind of mix of people as well. And it seems like these are all things that you deal with in your books.
Absolutely. I like to think that my books defy the Western stereotypes and mythos, and yet we are really informed by our landscape and our weather and our culture and the environment that we both live in and often try to protect, or we're very much at the mercy of it. So they're very related.
Some call you a Western writer, you're a Colorado writer, and place does play a big part in your books, but it's not the Colorado of Rocky Mountain High.
That's right. I do tend to prefer to be called a writer, as we all are, who work to write books, important books about life and humanity and how best to live on this planet. And so I'm often described as a writer of the West, but that often feels more like a pigeonholing than anything else. My novels are set here, and they are inherently concerned with issues that we face in the West, but we are all writers and readers.
And perhaps that's just a need to the publishing industry's need to categorize or to classify.
Perhaps. I think back in the day when Stegner was called that, it was a compliment. And he didn't quite appreciate it either, I don't think. But we have Southern writers and Western writers and the Montana writers. And in if you're using it as a way to define a sensibility or a topic, that's great. But often I feel like New York uses it as a way to say that they are the other and not quite as important.
Your current book, Red Lightning, deals with a family and two sisters. And after reading it, I thought, well, I'm going to see what else Laura's written. And then I saw that Skybridge dealt with these two sisters. And then you have a couple of other books that deal with a family over time. And that was intriguing to me, to deal with people over the spans of time. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think in my head there's a one large group of imaginary characters on a landscape, and they pop in and out of books in different places. And many other authors do this. Everyone from the literary Carol Shields, a Canadian writer who won the Pulitzer for the Stone Diaries, to Stephen King. And I think we writers, our brains get populated and various characters raise their hand and say, now tell my story. Tell it too. So my first novel was Sky Bridge, and it was told from the point of view of Libby, who's got a sister named Tess. And the second book that's out, Red Lightning, is told from Tess's point of view 10 years later.
And I'll say that it didn't matter to me that I read the second book first, and that I was actually kind of excited then to discover these characters and different voices at a different period of time. It just made the whole experience richer, like just talking to people.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yes, I hope you don't have to read all of them. They all should stand alone, but I do think that they inform each other as a group. If you read them all, they tell a different type of story.
And you also write or edit... You've edited some anthologies that seem to be about the environment. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I had started as a fiction writer, and after my second book came out, I was in a car crash, and I couldn't write. I couldn't type anymore and use my wrists, and I didn't know how long that would go on. But in order to keep from going a little crazy, I could realize that I could lie on my back and edit books, other people's manuscripts. I just couldn't do that much typing. And since I was in the process of healing, I suppose there was some kind of connection. I became very interested in helping the earth heal. And so one was about river health. In my area, there's a river that's, there's efforts to dam it. Also about open spaces and ranch lands in the West. And then I edited a third book about dumpster diving and gleaning because I'm a big dumpster diver. And then I wrote a nonfiction book about bears. So the environmental ethic has always been a huge part of my life and writing. And that was a healing time for me to work on those books, all of which had proceeds that were donated to various good causes. And then I went back to fiction because I could use my wrists again and felt like I had healed in the way I needed to.
And you incorporate these themes into your fiction work, and it's... These are issues that face us heavily in the West, all over the place, including wildfire.
Absolutely. I was evacuated 2 years ago for a fire, and it came within a couple hundred yards of my home. And it was traumatizing and yet seemed so inevitable. There was so much beetle kill and dried grass and drought. So I would say both my fiction and non are highly influenced by place, and that's because my life is highly influenced by place. I spend a great deal of every day outside hiking and walking and gardening. I live in the mountains of Colorado, so it's hard not to be there.
Well, here too in California, that's a big thing we face. We have a lot of drought mortality this year, and I think it's going to be a big fire season all the way around. But you guys just got a bunch of weather, a bunch of rain, and what do you think? Is that going to mitigate things at all?
I've never been used to living in rain. I feel like I'm in Portland or Seattle, some rainy place. But we have a lot of rain lately, and yet I think it will, well, we'll see. It might cycle back. I will say, though, for Red Lightning, I stole a story from California and plunked it into Colorado, which was that some immigrants were lost and they were dying of thirst, and so they started a signal fire to be found, hoping that the smoke would reveal their location, and the wind whipped up and it turned it into a very large wildfire. I took that story from California and set it in Colorado because I could see that happening there, and it's something we both states really struggle with, I know.
Fire or immigration?
Oh, both. and the heartbreak and social justice and environmental justice issues that emanate from both.
That is something I did want to talk to about the whole idea of justice in situations like this. In Red Lightning, that is a theme that you just mentioned of the immigrants coming in and their pickup isn't there and they set this fire. But in Colorado right now, is this something that is an undercurrent, or is it something that is a big issue of a whole cultural aspect in certain parts of the state with these coyotes and bringing the pueyos in?
I'd say it's a very prevalent issue, a very big issue, but it doesn't get spoken of much in the news. And that's one thing books can do, is give voice to the voiceless or tell the stories that aren't often told. I'm surprised it's not in the news, except that it's a very quiet enterprise, and that's exactly why I wanted to write about it and give voice to it, because there's a lot of human drama and tragedy that plays out on the border that just doesn't make the national news. And that breaks my heart. There's really a lot going on.
There's also a lot of compassion and a lot of support, almost like an underground railroad.
There is. And in my book, Tess is a Leventona. She crosses people once they're past the U.S.-Mexico border. And she's doing it for the money and other reasons. But she is mixed up with a group of people or knows people who are doing it for the humanitarian reasons. And they're both in the same job description, but for completely different reasons, and that creates a really nice tension, I think. It allowed me to look at the humanity of the situation.
Let's talk about these two sisters, Tess and Libby. Tess has a child, goes away, leaves the baby to be raised by her sister, and they live kind of a hardscrabble life.
They do, and Tess, at the beginning of the novel, Tess shows up to see her daughter for the first time in 10 years, and she's really in a bad spot. She's been very traumatized by something she saw at the border and by living a lifestyle that she thought was going to be wild and fun and free but turned out to be difficult and hard, and she's more or less homeless and in ill health. And she shows up to a rural, poor area, but one that's got a solid sense of purpose. And that's really what she's seeking, is a redemption and to find a life of purpose and to be forgiven for some things she's done. And so I think it's a story of her, you know, from rock bottom, clawing her way out into a much better, purposeful place.
And the people around her, her sister, her daughter Amber, who is now 10, and her family, seem at once unsurprised, relieved, and wary about her coming back.
I think they're wary for sure, because she probably brings trouble with her, and she does because of her job description and her past lifestyle. And yet, I think many of us, if a long-lost sibling showed up on our door, we wouldn't quite slam it on their face. We'd crack it open enough to hear what they had to say. And that's really what Libby does. She's been leading a life of compassion and growth and learning herself, but she's really at a much stronger place and able to reach out and try to help her sister one last time, as long as Tess helps herself, too.
And Tess is really filled with a lot of, I'd say, self-loathing, too. And her, some of your descriptions of her were painful, it painted a pretty tough picture of her kind of crawling around her drug-addled way of thinking about things, but still trying to be present. I found some of those descriptions really, really apt and unnerving in a way.
Well, thank you. I like writing about characters who are in a tough spot. I wish we had more of them in our literature. But I will say that she's at first couple pages, she's pretty dislikable, and I think readers might think, I'm not sure I want to continue on this journey with her. But what I hope to show is that she's very wounded, and she's actually very tender. And the rough outer edge she puts up is, you know, clearly a protective gesture that the reader can kind of see through. She's just trying to be so tough that no one will like her so that she doesn't have to love them back. And so the psychology of characters is really important to me. And Tess has been abused, and she's prone to disassociation, kind of stepping away from her body at times of stress. And I wanted to really discuss that. And, yeah, she's a tough one, but she's a good one.
They're all kind of tough broads, and they have to be. But yet, you also illustrate this kind of generational, how we do inherit and pass on some of these qualities, good and wounded.
That's absolutely right. My father, who just passed away, and my book, Stars Go Blue, is about him. But he was a geneticist, and if there's one thing I believe, it's that we not only inherit the traits of our parents, but that what they've experienced is often influences our behaviors. And so Tess is really, she's come from a difficult past. That's not her fault. And she's trying to do the best with what she can. She's got a limited toolbox right now of ways to help herself and seek help. But that toolbox is getting... that's what the book is about, is like how to add things to your toolbox.
And I'll say their daughter, because really Libby has raised Amber, and Tess is the biological mother, but Amber herself...